This podcast is brought to you by All Family Pharmacy. This is your family pharmacy where you can get ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, antibiotics, and even your daily meds, all online. Go to allfamilypharmacy.com/Howie and use code Howie10 to save 10% right now. That's allfamilypharmacy.com/Howie and use code Howie10.
Howie Carr, a Boston Herald columnist and radio hitman.
Howie Carr is a columnist for the Boston Herald as well as a radio talk show host who has been a thorn in the side of Whitey Bulger and his gang for 20 years.
I was referred to today as 1970s Boston.
Howie is sort of an insidious force in this area.
Nothing gets you going in the morning like a good cup of Joe and a little Howie Carr, right?
Hey, paper boy.
It comes from the tabloid talk show stuff in Boston, and it was concocted there.
Live from sunny Florida,
Mar-a-Lago,
it's Howie Carr.
844-500-4242. Press conference in the Oval Office between President Trump and Mamdani is wrapping up right now, and Trump is being very gracious, I must say, and he seems to be in a magnanimous mood. And it'll be interesting. We'll play some cuts as we go through the rest of the show. But first, we wanted to talk about the status hearing today in the Karen Reed civil case in Plymouth Superior Court. And as you know, she's being sued by the family of her deceased boyfriend John O'Keefe, and she is now trying to consolidate everything into her own suit against the so-called house defendants, the people, the McAlberts, for lack of a better term, and various members of the state police for violating her civil rights and destroying her life for the last 3.5 years. And so today, all the parties gathered together via Zoom and tried to hash things out a little bit. And joining us now to talk about what happened and what's happening in this case overall is her local civil attorney, Damon Seligson. Damon, thanks for being with us here on the Howie Carr Show.
Hi, Howie. Thanks for having me.
The hearing was rather brief, and it seemed anticlimactic. Got kicked down the road to December 19th. So can you tell us where all of these moving pieces stand right now in this case, with the case against her and the case now that she's brought, and the 46-page complaint, which was a bombshell that you filed earlier this week. Can you tell us where everything stands?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a little bit of a procedural quagmire, which is indicative of civil cases like this. So, the O'Keefes filed the wrongful death case where Karen is defending herself. We went to court on the 22nd of September to tell the judge that we are not only going to be defending her, but we're going to be bringing these new claims against new parties, the house defendants and the three state troopers, the town of Canton and the Mass State Police. And we asked the court to consider us bringing those claims in the pending case in Plymouth. In response to that, the judge seemed to be somewhat concerned about how unwieldy that might cause the litigation to be. And so we went and said, he'd entertain a motion to amend the case so that we could bring in new parties and new claims. We served such a motion. We served it on the O'Keefes and their lawyer. We served it on all the new parties that are named in the new complaint. We then received oppositions to that effort to bring them all in. And some of the arguments that were raised made us reconsider, should that affirmative claim process against these new parties be in the wrongful death case, or should it be a separate lawsuit? So what we did was we withdrew the motion, and filed a separate lawsuit, this 46-page complaint, this heavy...
I'm holding it up right now for the camera. It's, it was filed on, I think, Tuesday, right?
Yes. And, I mean, you know, that complaint is hard-hitting. It speaks for itself. We're very proud of it. We believe we will prove the allegations in that complaint. And so we found that in Bristol County, Howie, where Karen is from, and you're allowed to file where the plaintiff resides. So we filed it in that case today in court in the wrongful death action in the Plymouth County case. Discussion was had about how did the two cases proceed, where you've got discovery that's going to be conducted in the wrongful death case in Plymouth and the new case in Bristol County. And all of a sudden, plaintiff's counsel is asking the court, maybe we should consolidate these two so that we can have not have duplicative discovery and two depositions, which is what we had suggested in September. So
it's turned around. It's turned around. They didn't want to do it in September, but now they want to do it after you have withdrawn your original motion to consolidate.
The original motion, not to consolidate, you're right, to bring it in the same case. Now we would have to consolidate the two cases. And what's ironic is that the idea about consolidation is what we talk about as a footnote in the new complaint, is suddenly a process that the plaintiff's attorney thinks makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. It didn't make sense in September, but now it makes sense. Well, you know, we filed a very hard-hitting complaint. We make very strong allegations on Karen's behalf. She is not waiting to defend herself as much as she's waiting to pursue these claims. And we're going forward, you know, as I said, the gloves have come off. We've made very strong allegations, which we stand by, and let the discovery start. And so today in the session before the judge, he was trying to get an understanding of how all of this would unfold. And so he wants us to come back on December 19th. There's some discovery issues that he wants to address about some, you know, documents and interrogatory answers and things like that. But for the most part, it looks like the two cases will have discovery proceed together on a consolidated basis. And we'll just have to see what all of the other parties who have we have added to that new case want to do. And I imagine they'll all see the same benefit to the two cases proceeding in the same on the same track in terms of discovery.
But one's in Plymouth and one's in Bristol. So are there going to be two separate trials now, or are they going to be reconsolidated back into one?
Yeah, good question. So it makes economic sense to have the cases at least consolidated for discovery purposes. Even though they're in different counties, you can still have one judge that would preside over both cases for purposes of discovery. So if a deposition, for example, of Karen Reed takes place, it would apply to both cases.
And you would have, at that point, Damon Seligson, who's Karen Reed's civil attorney, at that point, would you have like eight lawyers or nine lawyers asking Karen Reed questions at this discovery hearing?
You would have every lawyer who is has a party in the case.
Yeah. So eight or nine
to ask her questions. Yeah, absolutely. On the flip side, eight or nine lawyers will be able to ask questions of Michael Proctor. So, you know, it's sort of to everyone's benefit and perhaps
it would just take forever, though, wouldn't it? I mean, these depositions the deposition with one lawyer takes all day sometimes, right?
It's going to be a very long deposition for whoever is deposed. I don't think it's going to be a single day. And interestingly, when you serve a deposition notice in Massachusetts, you say in the notice the deposition will continue from day to day until concluded. So who knows how long those depositions will take. But I imagine every lawyer is going to want to ask every witness questions on his or her client's behalf. And so, yeah, you're right. It's not unrealistic to say that someone's deposition could take 5, 6, 7 days.
And how many witnesses? How many witnesses are we talking about here, Damon Seligson? We're talking about dozens, aren't we? Ultimately,
at least, Howie. At least we're talking about all the O'Keefes, Karen. I mean, her parents. I'm sure the people in the house, other people who were called as witnesses at trial, the state police. Then you're talking about experts. There's going to be expert depositions, I imagine, in this case. It's going to be a very long, drawn-out process. And in reality, to have that take place in two cases that arise out of the same facts makes absolutely no sense, which is why we said in the first place in September, put these two cases together and let us litigate the entire issue, defending the wrongful death case and the affirmative claims in one proceeding. They opposed it. They threw up their hands in opposition, and now suddenly they're seeing the light. So the judge is gonna entertain a motion to consolidate, which the plaintiff's attorney, the O'Keefe's attorney today, suggested he was gonna bring. We were the ones that raised that we were gonna bring it, but whoever brings it, it makes perfect sense that the two cases are consolidated purposes of discovery.
I mean, this just seems like it's, you used the word quagmire at the beginning. This seems like a mega quagmire. Can the state just come in and say, hey, look, this is going to go on forever. It's going to cost everybody an arm and a leg. We're going to make an offer to Karen Reed. Could they do that? And add the house defendants into the settlement as well?
I think in any litigation matter, whether it's this type of massive quagmire or a smaller case, at some point there's always a discussion, with parties and their lawyers about cost, expense, exposure, liability, chances to prevail, and then they start talking about does it make sense to settle. Oftentimes, cost and extensive discovery and what that's going to entail leads parties to discuss whether or not it makes sense to try and settle cases. So that's always a possibility. There's also the possibility that once we start uncovering things, that the state may say, the Mass State Police may say, well, this is problematic for us. We probably should sit down with Karen Reed's lawyers and see if we can resolve it. That's always a possibility as well. But we're very early in the case. As we told the judge today, we've served subpoenas, we're serving discovery. The case is active. It's very active. Unfortunately, the public doesn't see it because most of civil cases is behind the scenes in lawyers' offices. Discovery is not public. But it's a daily, hourly process that we're working on this case. And now we filed this second lawsuit, which we said was coming, and we're going to get going on that in earnest.
So how long till we're going to get some resolution here, Damon Seligson? I know it's a, I'm asking you to make a wild guess.
that's a great question. The wrongful death case pending in Plymouth County, Howie, has a discovery deadline of August 26th. So theoretically, we have at least until August 26 in that case to do.
That's the O'Keefe. That's the O'Keefe case against Karen.
That's the O'Keefe case. That's the O'Keefe case. We asked the judge to extend that discovery deadline out to December of 2026. The case we filed in Bristol County has a similar discovery deadline of, because it's a civil case, the court establishes a discovery deadline as a matter of sort of a computer-generated discovery deadline. And that's also typically 18 months out. So it's not going to be for quite a long time. I cannot estimate, but it's not going to be for a long time. You've got to really start getting depositions done and trying to see what witnesses are saying and what evidence is uncovered. I mean, for example, we're getting documents from produced in discovery. We're getting hundreds of thousands of pieces of paper. As you can imagine, that are being exchanged.
I think they said million. I think somebody said a million so far today.
We got a trench of documents from some of the parties, that are in the hundred thousands, close to a million pieces of paper. So you've got to go through all of that. Then you've got to sit down and take depositions. Then you've got to analyze, you know, how did the deponents do? The parties consider, you know, does that hurt or help the case? And then things start to materialize towards, you know, are there discussions about resolution? But we're very, very far from that discussion. I can't even estimate how long it's going to take, but it's going to take quite some time.
Looks like we're in for the long haul here. People, the texters want to know one last question. Have you come across any evidence that Chloe is still around, the dog?
Well, I can't tell you anything like that yet, and I think it's a fair question. I'm just gonna, you know, just gonna let that play out. But we're uncovering a lot of information as a result of all of the subpoenas and the discovery. We'll get to the bottom of that, I can assure you.
All right, Damon Seligson, thank you so much for joining us. We'll check in with you again and keep us informed. And again, a really great filing there earlier this week in the Karen Reed case against the House defendants and the Mass State Police. We appreciate it. Thanks for joining us. Really means a lot. Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you too, Damon Seligson. You don't have to wait for Black Friday for the Nauset Beach End special. The sale is on, but ends at midnight on Black Friday. Go to NausetBeachEnd.com and get a $200 or a $400 certificate for yourself or a loved one. When you put in code HOWIE35, you will receive 35% off. Many of us think of Cape Cod as the place to be during the summer, but you know what? It's super special during the off-season, too, especially if you're staying oceanside at the Nauset Beach End. Book your Nauset Beach Inn getaway today. Overlooking Nauset Beach, the Nauset Beach Inn is the only lodging available inside the Cape Cod National Seashore. Every room commands a superb view of the great outer beach and the ever-changing sea. Nauset Beach Inn is pet-friendly, too, and each room is spacious with two queen-size beds. Book now and get the dates you want at NausetBeachInn.com with code HOWIE35 to get 35% off. This is good on the $200 or $400 certificate. Discount is taken at checkout. This is an incredible value. With only 13 rooms, reservations fill up quickly, so book early at NausetBeachInn.com. NausetBeachInn.com, a short drive to a vacation far away. I'm Howie Carr.
Howie Carr will return. Howie Carr is back.
Today's poll question is brought to you by the Nauset Beach Inn Black Friday Cyber Monday special. Go to NausetBeachInn.com and get a $200 or a $400 certificate for yourself or a loved one. When you put in code HOWIE35, you will receive 35% off. With only 13 rooms, reservations fill up quickly, so book early at NausetBeachInn.com. Code HOWIE35. Jared, what's the poll question? What are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at HowieCarshow.com, is should indicted Florida Rep. Sheila Cherfalus McCormick be expelled from Congress for allegedly stealing $5 million in federal funds? Yes, they threw out Santos for much less. No, she says it's racist or unsure.
Yes, they threw out Santos for much less.
97% say yes, throw her out. 2% right. Say no, it's racist, and 1% is unsure.
And if your argument is we have to wait till she has a trial and is convicted, they didn't wait for that with Santos, a member of the non-binary or gay or the two-spirit or the gender-fluid community, whatever he is. 844-500-4242. 508 says everyone's eyes are glazing over. This is insanity. They're going to have to settle this. The Mass State Police are going to have to settle their part of it anyway. Another 508. It looks like the guy killed in the cranberry bog in Bourne, also known as Bourne, wasn't a victim of windmills. Looks like he was sanding on a bog buggy and it flipped into a drainage canal and he was pinned under it. Yeah. But there have been problems with the blades, these giant blades on the the windmills, and it's just bad. And the Trump administration is knocking Mara Healey after she pushes for home heating funding. Unfortunately, they didn't put in anything about how she was bragging about shutting down the pipelines to make everything more expensive. But they did say the fact that the money's not getting there is the fault of the shutdown, which was caused by Democrats. We'll be right back. I'm Howie Carr.
It's Howie Carr.
844-500-4242. 844-500-4242. If you would, if you'd like to join us. And again, I would suggest you, this is a really good opportunity to take advantage of, to lay in some really excellent frozen Italian food from Somerville, Massachusetts. Once a heavily Italian area, not so much, but it's they still got a lot of great Italian food, especially out of Mortadella Head. And this is a $100 value for $50. It's an e-gift certificate. Go to HowieCarrShow.com, click on store. And I finished off the end of the eggplant parmesan. I was kind of like getting low on breakfast food because it's the end of the week. And so I just had a little bit left. I ate it for breakfast today. It was so good. And their lasagna is even better, in my opinion, than the eggplant parm and the meat. Everything is really good. You're really going to be happy with it. And it's something to have around. And your kid's coming over for the holidays. And they will like it a lot. You just put it in the oven a couple hours early and let it in a convection oven, and then you're ready to go, and you can microwave it to your heart's content. It's great stuff. 844-500-4242. So this morning, the Harvard Crimson, or maybe yesterday, they came out with a new scoop on from the Epstein files. You know, Larry Summers, we've been talking about him, the racist former president of Harvard, trying to get the advice of a Democrat sex trafficker, Jeffrey Epstein, on how he could seduce a Chinese woman who they referred to as Peril, as in yellow peril. Sounds like a racial slur to me. But hey, you know, I mean, Shannon O'Brien got fired for less from the Cannabis Control Commission. She mentioned the word yellow, and they fired her. She got her job back, but they tried to take it away from her. Now the Globe just won't even report this, that there are these racist statements out there. But the Harvard Crimson, the student newspaper, reported that they're going through this stuff. They're doing a good job. Summers visited Epstein's Island during his honeymoon in 2005. That is new news. New news. Mr. Summers and Ms. New, for that is his wife that he was trying to cheat on with the Chinese woman that he referred to as Peril, spent their honeymoon in St. John in Jamaica in December 2005. As a part of that trip, they made a brief visit of less than a day to Mr. Epstein's Island. Oh, my goodness. And the Globe didn't even want to touch it. They finally picked it up this afternoon. Well, but did anyone know he was a perv at that point in December 2005? You know who knew? The Palm Beach Police. They'd known since March. They'd been inquiring into allegations from the mother of a 14-year-old girl who had been molested by the Democrat sex pervert trafficker. In October, 2 months before Larry Summers, the president of Harvard University, and his new wife, the poet, visited the pervert island, police executed a search warrant on Epstein's home in Palm Beach as part of the expanded investigation. Meanwhile, Harvard has launched a fresh investigation into his interactions with Epstein. You know what this is like? This is like the Globe. The Globe with Karen Reed. They didn't want to touch this case. That's why Turtle Boy broke all the stories. That's why the day-to-day stuff, the best stuff, was done when after Turtle Boy broke it, it was done by bloggers, by people with podcasts, the Lawfare people, the Law Tube people, you know, like Melanie Little, and the Globe just couldn't. They didn't want to go up against the establishment. They just like to kiss the ass of the ruling class. And it's the same thing with this this Epstein stuff. Once they realized Trump wasn't involved, they've totally lost interest. Their job is to afflict the afflicted and comfort the comfortable. And this is not what the Epstein story has become. It's the Democrats got what they wanted, and now they don't want it. It's kind of funny. 844-500-4242. Ed, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Ed.
Hi, Howie. That was a great interview with Damon Seligson. I thought people might be interested to know only about 1% or so of civil cases ever go all the way to a jury verdict. It's a lot smaller than people think.
Yeah. I mean,
that's way down from what it was 50 or 60 years right. ago, when it was closer to like 10 or 15%.
I've never heard of a case this involved and confusing and with so many moving parts in it. How can they ever go to trial? Multiple trials, Ed. It just can't happen, can it? I mean, just procedurally, how can they do it?
Well, the problem is all the federal and state rules of civil procedure have been set up to allow all this extensive discovery to avoid like a gotcha or a surprise at trial. But this has created its own problem that it's way too complicated and expensive, and it just basically is whoever can outlast the other side wins.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And you know, and how, you know, and you could say, oh, the state has unlimited resources so they can outlast Karen Reed. But does the state really want to have this kind of discovery? I mean, look what we've discovered, what we found out already just from the FBI taking over the investigation and getting all the all of the the texts and email messages of Michael Proctor, and God only knows what else is out there, Ed. I think they've just started. We don't know what's in Proctor's private cell phones. We don't know what's in all the others' private cell phones that they haven't been able to destroy as they did before the criminal trials.
Well, that's really the issue, that this is going to have spillover because of Proctor into a lot of other cases, including cases that have already been resolved.
Right. Yeah. I know. And this, you know, I was thinking that maybe they would solve all the Brian Walsh stuff at once, but he still wants to go on trial for murder, so they're going to still put Proctor on the stand in that case, unless there's a resolution, you know, some kind of a plea.
Right.
It's just a mess. What a mess this whole thing is. Thanks for the call, Ed. 844-500-4242, 844-500-4242. So the meeting is over between Trump and the mayor-elect, Zohran Mamdani. And Trump, I figured he would be kind of gracious. It wasn't one of these things like when they all sit down and, you know, J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio come in and they sit on the chair. This was like, you know, because again, he's not the leader of a foreign country. He doesn't rise to that level. So he just comes in and he has a chat in the Oval Office, and then they bring in the reporters, and Trump is sitting at his desk, and Mamdani is standing, and they're taking calls. And you know, but again, Trump was very gracious, and he tries to get along, and he meets with anybody. There's no question. I mean, he will take a meeting with anybody, actually, and so that's what he did here. You know, everything is negotiable, as Menachem Begin used to say, or as look at it, Otto von Bismarck. Germany has no permanent enemies. Germany has no permanent friends. Germany only has permanent interests. And that's the way Trump is running the United States of America. And, you know, one of our permanent interests is having a New York City, the largest metropolitan district in the U.S. not being a total basket case any more than it already is. 844-500-4242. So we're going to play some cuts from the meeting here in just a second. Let me take another call here, though, on Norfolk County. Johnny, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Johnny.
You know, Howie, before I get to my point, years ago at a book signing, I got a T-shirt from you. It said, "I'd rather hunt with Dick Cheney than ride with Ted Kennedy." And that's the only good thing Dick Cheney.
Well, that lawyer that he shot died in his bed, Johnny, unlike Mary Jo Kopechne.
You know, living in Norfolk County, my question is, when Karen Reed wins her lawsuits, how much more is my property taxes and everything going to go up? This is going to be on the state.
Yeah, but you know, the good thing is, Johnny, what are there, 17 counties or 14 counties? So all of the other counties are going to have to pick up the tab along with you and me as taxpayers in Norfolk County. This is going to be on the state. And I mean, she was really wronged, wasn't she, Johnny? I mean, there's no question about that. She deserves a ton of money.
Oh, you know what? She's going to be on the next, you know, senior bachelor party, or whatever, you know, one of those stupid reality shows, because she's going to be having a fortune. And, you know, she's a good-looking girl, so she's all set.
Yeah, you can't get back all the, you know, again, they laid it all out in the complaint. You know, I mean, she lost her job, she lost her professorship, she lost her home, she lost her friends, she lost her reputation. They destroyed everything, and it wasn't because she was guilty. They framed her. You know, talk about emotional distress. They, you know, just to cite one example, when they brought her in one of the times right afterwards, you know, her boyfriend's dead. She doesn't know what happened. They handcuffed her to the radiator in the state police barracks. They handcuffed to a radiator in the winter. And, you know, hey, they didn't care. They were going to pin it on the girl. They just needed a patsy. They had to take care of, just like they took care of Matthew Farwell, who, by the way, today pleaded not guilty to murdering his girlfriend and his girlfriend and the unborn baby, who turns out not to be his. And it's interesting, isn't it, that, you know, all the Democrats in Massachusetts want to defend abortion rights, and it's just it's the woman's choice and it's women's health. But the unborn baby, and it was just the fetus had just been conceived a couple of months earlier. It's a child. It's a second count of murder, and I'm glad that that's what they've done, because I think it would be three, four years old now. That little baby would be 3.5, 4 years old, little boy, and he was murdered by this cop, and they tried to cover it up. The DA and the state police tried to cover it up, and no one can ever tell me different. 32,000. Text messages between them, and the state police couldn't find any of them. You're telling me the state police are on the level? The holidays bring family gatherings, travel, and crowded airports, and that's when everyone seems to get sick. Preparing your medicine cabinet ahead of time saves stress, time, and money. No one wants to be sick, especially right before the holidays. When you prepare early, you skip the pharmacy lines and clinic visits. All Family Pharmacy is a family-owned pharmacy that believes in medical freedom and real access to care. Every order is reviewed by a licensed doctor for safety. Order everything safely online. Over 300 trusted medications available, including antibiotics, antivirals, maintenance meds, and more. Orders ship fast directly to your door. No waiting rooms, no insurance hassles, no nonsense. Real health care that works for you, not against you. Affordable, transparent pricing. Your health, your choice, your freedom. All Family Pharmacy carries antibiotics, amoxicillin, Z-Pack, doxycycline, antivirals like Tamiflu and hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and mebendazole. daily maintenance meds for ongoing health needs, blood pressure meds, for example, diabetes, thyroid, etc., and a whole lot more. Visit allfamilypharmacy.com/Howie to order today. Use promo code Howie10 to get 10% off your order. Get what you need before the holiday rush starts. It's one less thing for you to worry about this season. Always consult a licensed healthcare provider before using any medication. I'm Howie Carr.
Follow Howie on X.
I've got to post a link with witty comment.
At Howie Carr Show. Howie Carr is back.
I want to get to some of these Trump cuts with Mamdani, but let me just read you what happened to Karen Reed. And this is from the lawsuit that filed on Tuesday, which I'd really recommend people read if it lays it all out. Beginning in January 2022, the defendant's actions have had a profound effect on Ms. Reed. She lost her employment and income. She lost her professorship. She lost her private health insurance. She lost her car and her driver's license. She lost her house. Her reputation, both personally and professionally, was utterly destroyed. She incurred multiple millions of dollars in debt for legal fees and additional millions in expert fees and costs. In addition, after being arrested twice, jailed twice, and tried twice, she has suffered years of intense stress and emotional harm, worried that she would be imprisoned for the rest of her natural life for a crime she did not commit. Ms. Reed suffers from both Crohn's disease and multiple sclerosis. As documented under seal with the criminal court, Ms. Reed has undergone tens of surgeries for her illnesses, to manage her illnesses prior to January 29th, 2022, and endured a blood transfusion just months before O'Keefe's death. In the aftermath of the charges, two arrests, and during both trials, Ms. Reed suffered a well-documented exacerbation of her symptoms amid the stress, anxiety, and emotional and physical impacts of being wrongfully accused of murder. While fighting for her freedom against the corrupt prosecution, Ms. Reed underwent dozens upon dozens of documented medical procedures and treatments to attempt to address her health issues. 844-500-4242. John, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, John.
Go ahead. Hey, Howie. Just calling from Tennessee. My family and I, we just fled Massachusetts and everything that's going on there. And I heard you talking about prices for utilities and stuff. Here's a lowdown for my utilities for this month. $74 electricity, $9 natural gas, $24 water bill, and $110 for my Starlink, which that's my internet. I'm already winning.
They all sound pretty good, but $9 for natural gas. $9 for natural gas. I'll bet you got plenty of natural gas pipelines down there in Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. No, nobody's stopping that down here. You can believe that, my friend. Have a good day.
Thanks, John. $9. How's that sound? Barr Healey bragged about stopping the pipelines. Cut 14, President Trump in the Oval Office with the mayor-elect of New York City. Cut 14.
You both have differences when it comes to ICE agents in New York City. Mr. Mamdani, you called ICE a rogue government entity. I wonder how you reconcile your differences on both of those issues.
Well, I think we're going to work them out. And I think that if we have known murderers and known drug dealers and some very bad people, you know, we want to get them out. And the mayor wants to have peace. We discussed this at great length, actually, maybe more than anything else. He wants to have a safe New York. Ultimately, a safe New York is going to be a great New York. If it's not safe, no matter how well we do with pricing and with anything else, we can talk about anything you want. If you don't have safe streets, it's not going to be a success. So we're going to work together. We're going to make sure that if there are horrible people there, we want to get them out. I think he wants to get them out maybe more than I do. So we'll work together. We discussed it at great length. Yes, please.
Not sure I believe that, but you got to give the guy the benefit of the doubt. Cut 12 on Mamdani calling him a despot. Cut 12. Go ahead.
And again to what it could look like to lift those New Yorkers out of struggle and start to deliver them a city that they could do more than just struggle to afford it, but actually start to live it.
And I've been called much worse than a despot, so it's not that insulting.